They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 227, Cream Cracker. My name's Matthew Turner alongside Ashley Soden, and our special guest with us today is Hammer from Raider Nation News Today on YouTube. Hammer, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Ash, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. As I mentioned on the little pre-show preamble, did mess up and forget one bit of my game preview, so quickly finishing that off of watching college football. It's been a great day in some watching some of those games, and now hopefully we get to discuss an absolutely great game with us wearing our worst uniform combination.
Oh, let's not talk about the pajama party that's about to happen. How are we wearing our silvers at home? It looks so horrible.
They always look horrible, but at least that helmet makes everything better. Just focus on that and we'll be good.
Yeah, although I have seen lots of national media going, what's this thin line doing? I don't think it's being received well nationally, to be honest. Never mind. Anyway, we're going to go through some preamble. We're going to talk about a little bit of Lions news very briefly before going on to Raiders at Lions on Monday night. So to kick us off, we've got a Discord channel, which is doing some great, great things right now. Open to fans from all persuasions, including Raiders fans. So if you want to come and say hi and chat with us, it's a good bunch of people. We'll talk about basically all sport all the time, or anything all the time to us. So come and say hi. College Football Podcast is going to be coming up midweek next week. So you can talk about the fact that Oklahoma, previously unbeaten Oklahoma, have fallen today to Kansas. There's other big games in there. What was the other game we were talking about? It was Penn State almost falling to Indiana as well, which is just all manners of funny. So go and check out Ant and Ryan as they check out college football. Please don't forget to like the episode, sub to the podcast, and rate and review and all that good stuff. And don't forget to add Lions Nation Unite on Facebook. That's Herman Moore's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together. So we're there, Dose of Dion and Micro Mike and all those good guys. So go and add them there. Otherwise, there's a feedback form down below and there's a tip jar, as well as with Twitch and YouTube monetized. So if you want to show some love, that's much appreciated. And finally, we have our merch store launched, as you can see behind me with the lovely flag, but there's hats and jumpers and jumpers. That's not a word in America. Sweats and hoodies and whatever. So come and check us out. Mile marker crackered, as in Jacob's cream crackered, as in cheese and biscuits, and also feeling tired or destroying someone. I did not think that would translate particularly well, but desperation. Anyway, two very quick bits of news before we get into the preview, which is that Lomas Brown, it was announced before that he was going to be inducted into the Pride of the Lions at the start of the season. Well, he's going in on Monday. So the Lions fans need to get loud for Lomas, because he's been an absolutely fantastic player for the team, one of the best. And of course, as the color commentator on the radio as well there too. So he is giving his service to the team and we need to show him some love back. And Dan Campbell has revealed that Brad Holmes has been grinding on trade prospects. When asked if they had something in the works, he replied, maybe. Ash, I mean, it's no more than you'd expect, I think, at this point with the trade deadline on Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm trying not to read too much into it. Any GM is probably grinding it right now, trying to work out deals, because that's what you do. If you're a good GM, you're always looking for deals. Proof of that? Who's seen as the best GM in the league? Howie Roseman. And what does he do pretty much every single year? He makes trades that seemingly make that team a lot better. I know, Matt, you weren't really a fan of the trade that they made last week for Bayard, but the AJ Brown trade, for example, he's always doing something to make that team up. Look, the Slade deal even with us. So Holmes is just doing his due diligence. If something happens, great. Good addition to the team, and he thinks it'll make us go better this year, I'm all for it. If not, if you don't make any trades, it's him trusting the process. We're keeping our draft picks, which is what he's best at. He came through college scouting, and that's what he's best at. So just keep as many picks as we can and use them well.
Hammer, going to talk about your channel in just a second, but are you going to have any movement come trade deadline? Because, you know, Mondays are going to happen and then, you know, shit's going down and you could be going in at 500 or you could be going in 3-5. So, you know, it's a big shift for you guys and in a fairly open division, bar Kansas City.
Yeah. As it stands right now, like the one report that's been out there more than others is there's a good chance that Hunter Renfrow, our slot receiver, could be traded by the trade deadline. As it stands right now, it does appear that we are buyers. We are trying to add some type of depth or another piece, whether it be in the interior defensive line or even a defensive end. We've talked about guys like Brian Burns. Brian Burns is actually dealing with an elbow injury right now, and he might not even be playing for Carolina this weekend. We've talked about Leonard Williams. We've talked about Carl Lawson from the New York Jets. Just to name a few, we've talked about Danielle Hunter, lineman from the Minnesota Vikings, who's been on a tear this season. At this point in time, we just have to wait and see what happens come Halloween and this deadline. And hopefully the right moves are made, preferably for our defense to help us move forward the rest of the way.
All right. And just to talk about your channel and what's happened with you, I mean, you have had such a massive kind of following since you started, not all that long ago, and your dedication to what you do is amazing. So can you just talk a little bit about what, you know, I think it started as Hammer's House and being rebranded to Raider Nation News Today, but just tell us a bit about you.
That is correct. Originally from Long Island, New York, I've been a Raider fan since 1998. I was in, the fifth grade. History of the franchise, the old school mentality, the knock 'em dead by any means, take no prisoners type of attitude was how I played the game when I was a kid. And Al Davis was from Brooklyn, New York. So it's like, it just fit. I got into this. This is my third year covering the Raiders. I had a childhood friend that used to hear me call into ESPN Radio New York all the time, talking, whether it being football, baseball, basketball. He's like, dude, you stay on the phone with these guys. You they keep you engaged. Like, we got to put this to better use. So I got into it. And yeah, we started as Hammer's House. We rebranded not too long after the Pro Bowl this year, just to give it more of a look in regards to the nation and them knowing exactly what this channel is about and who exactly it is that I'm covering. And we just had a milestone of 7,000 subscribers a couple of days ago, and things can only go up. Like, I see Raider Nation's in the chat right now. Shout out to Grandizer. Shout out to Spicy. I appreciate you guys from the bottom of my heart. Like, none of this growth would have happened without each and every single one of them. So thank you guys so much.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I watched your last stream and you said basically at the top of it, let's get to 7,000, you're there. And it's such a big number of people. So, you know, that's fantastic. And thank you for gracing us with our small following to do this breakdown. So let's crack on with that. And the Raiders come in 3-4 after a slower start. They've really picked it up. Pro Football Reference has you as an expected wins of 2.1, which is harsh, but it says that perhaps you've been slightly lucky with your wins. I don't know. We'll get into that maybe in just a second. Your games have been a win at Denver, a loss at Buffalo, then a loss at home to Pittsburgh, and then at the Chargers. But wins at home to the Packers, at home to the Patriots, and then loss most recently at the Bears. The betting for this game, Raiders 13-4, Lions 17-4 on. 8-point spread in favor of the Lions. Over-under is 46. The injury report is out for the Lions, and it's really, really bad news for the Lions. Jonah Jackson is out. David Montgomery is out. And Frank Ragnow is doubtful for this game, as well as questionable Benito Jones, Josh Pascal, Malcolm Rodriguez, Halapulavati Vaitai, and Jerry Jacobs for the Raiders. They have Divine Diablo out, otherwise questionable Curtis Bolton, Daniel Carlson, and Nate Hobbs. Everyone else who was on the report does not have a designation. Hammer, how big of a loss is Diablo? Because he seems to have really come into his own in the last year or so, and otherwise you're pretty healthy by the looks of it.
Being a guy that came into the league, drafted as a safety and converted to an outside linebacker, And now this year they decide to put him in the middle. Like, he has done a really good job the last two seasons. He's been a tackling machine, but the injury bug has caught him a couple of times within these last two seasons. So I saw the report come out. I saw the report maybe an hour ago. When I saw that he was out, I was incredibly disappointed, because he's definitely a guy in the middle alongside Robert Spillane, that those guys are really important to our defense, especially at the linebacking position. So there's a good chance we're probably going to see Luke Masterson replacing him. Luke Masterson is a guy that I had this season as having a breakout year for the Raiders. I'm curious to see what he does, but you had mentioned before Daniel Carlson as well. He actually had that injury going into that game against the Bears. I was at the airport heading home, and I'm listening to the radio on my way to the airport, and they said that Carlson had actually gone into the blue tent in pregame. Now, earlier this week, there was a press conference by Josh McDaniels that stated that they did have a kicker in the building, and rightfully so right now. If he's not good come game time tomorrow, they're probably going to have to figure this out. I don't know who that kicker is that they brought into the building, but somebody's going to have to be there to replace him if, God forbid, he's not able to play tomorrow for us. Or I'm sorry, Monday. It feels like a Sunday right now.
It really does. And I mean, we'll talk about the Bears game, but the injury really showed up against the Bears. I mean, there were a couple of misses in there. Even the one he made from 41 really struggled to get there. So, you know, that could be, I mean, even if he goes, it's going to be a worry for the game, I would imagine. Ash, some big losses for the Lions. I mean, Ragnow, where center, we don't exactly have a lot of depth. We already had injuries on the offensive line, and, you know, now Montgomery confirmed out. We kind of knew that already. Jonah out. We kind of knew that already. But the interior of our offensive line are absolutely decimated.
It is. And we suffered it last year. We obviously had the revolving door going around. But as you said, there's not a lot of depth there. Like, Ross Piersbacher probably would have been the next man up at centre if he was still around. But unfortunately, he's not. So it's probably Graham. But that leaves us then the issue of who's going to come in at that other guard spot now, especially since with how looks last week. I was kind of hoping that Jonah would be back so we could put Graham back there, because Vitae does not look like he can move laterally at all. He can move backwards and forwards, but any steps to left and right, he cannot do right now because of his back. So that interior is a really big weakness for us now. Obviously, maybe the matchup is a bit bad for us in that respect as well, because obviously everyone focuses on Crosby, but that interior defensive line, me looking at it for the game preview, there were pieces there. They can do some damage, especially if it's Franks out, because that's suddenly you're replacing like two of the three slots from last week, which was already poor, but then you're losing the guy who does all the blitz pickups, really communicates on that offensive line. So it is going to be a really tough matchup potentially in the trenches, which is where we want to win. So, and I was just quickly, as you can see, I was quick on the phone. It was, I'm probably going to butcher his name, but Tristian Vissano was the kicker you guys tried out to replace Carlson.
That rings a bell with me.
Yeah. I think he was with the Chargers last year.
Oh, Lord. That's great.
Yeah, he wasn't good. You have a kicker on the practice squad, which I thought was interesting. James McCourt out of Illinois, second year player. I mean, I have no idea who he is, but he's there. So you would think that was a natural addition. You mean, you don't keep a guy on a practice squad if you don't have some belief in that he can come up and play.
You got to take into consideration who our head coach is and his mentality when it comes to how he utilizes players, how he activates players or does not activate them, because this apparently is like the unwritten rule with the Patriot way. That pretty much if they feel that you're not ready, or if you don't fall in line and do what they want you to do, then cool, you're not going to be active. And this has been said for guys that they have drafted, guys that they don't feel are ready. But it's like, how do you know they're not ready unless you give them that shot at the next level, especially if you're a rookie? And this has been the ongoing thing. Like, we have guys that we were very high on that we had drafted, guys that we were high on when we saw them play in the preseason, and every single week, oh, this one's not active. This one's not active. Like, why not?
Yeah, we so we'll talk about Josh McDaniels now, actually. It's as good a time as any. So he is into his, is this his third year now? Is it his second year? Second year. Yeah. And the Lions fans are very aware of what it means to have a coach bring in the Patriot way. And, you know, last year, to his credit, I think the Raiders, at least nationally, were not regarded as a team that were going to move mountains to do well. And they made the playoffs, right? They had a good season last year. Like
6-11.
Yeah.
We had a lot of games where we had the leads at the half, and McDaniels would steer away from what
fell away
in the first half, and we blew those leads. Like some of the wins, including the last two wins that we did have before we lost to the Bears, like we won by the skin of our teeth. Like we had the safety by Max Crosby against the Patriots, and last season against the Patriots, you saw the annexation of Puerto Rico fail, and Chandler Jones ended up with the ball in his hands and took it to the house. And the
game, what a moment,
against the Packers. Amik Robertson using those springs and coming down with that interception at the end of the game. Like, our offense is putrid right now. We are at the bottom right now when it comes to scoring. Yay, we finally got over 20 points against the Patriots, but guess what? Our defense is the reason we got over those 20 points. So it's just been another frustrating, disappointing, upsetting season so far.
Well, when it comes to his offensive mentality, we talked in the pre-show, before it was recorded. If you want to hear the pre-show stuff, it is live on YouTube, so come and do that. We were talking about how, you know, it's not gone great and he's not a head coach. But he has proven himself over a long period of time to be a good offensive coordinator. So from a very high level, what has happened to the Raiders' offense? Because if there's one thing you should have gotten right, it's that. And yet, compared to last year, it seems to have fallen off a cliff. And especially the run game and Josh Jacobs has just not got going this year.
You know what's funny? Last year, Josh Jacobs was utilized, or he started, in the Hall of Fame game, right? And it raised a lot of questions. Is McDaniels going to trade him? Where is he going? What about the Bills? What about the Eagles? What about this team? What about that team? And maybe a day after, he's not going anywhere, right? Then the first four games of the season, Josh Jacobs was not really utilized at all. Game week five and on, he ends up being the league-leading rusher. We go into the offseason, he's franchise tagged, as opposed to getting a little lengthy contract. We talked about it on my show a couple of times. I said like a three-year, $42 million deal would have been it. Give him a guaranteed maybe $26, $27 million. Cool. Would have been fine. Instead, he holds out. They finally decide at the tail end of the preseason, hey, we'll give you this for the year with a couple of incentives up to $12 million. All right, that's cool. We go into this season. Again, our offensive line looked pretty solid the first 2 weeks. Jimmy Garoppolo is not touched. Then all of a sudden, it was a downward spiral. We saw Jimmy Garoppolo go down with the concussion after the game against the Steelers. Aiden O'Connell comes in. Aiden O'Connell plays the Chargers, gets rocked, sacked seven times in that game. Questionable play calling, questionable decision-making by Josh McDaniels. But another thing that I don't think anybody, at least from the Raiders content creator world, has mentioned is Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo was not in this system for 6 years. As you guys know, he had played with the San Francisco 49ers. A Kyle Shanahan offense that likes to dink and dunk, screens, drag routes, not really high on the deep ball. You bring Garoppolo back into this system that is Josh McDaniels, and people were expecting this at in the third, especially with the additions of Devontae Adams and having signed Jacoby Myers in the offseason. And it's, Jimmy Garoppolo just can't seem to get it done right now. I don't want to put full blame on him, but I'm not going to put full blame on McDaniels either. But there's a lot of things that just seem to be utilized for a very short period of time or not utilized at all. The tight ends all of a sudden finally got in the mix over the last couple of weeks. We saw Michael Mayer had a solid drive. I believe it was it the Bears game or was it? No, I think it was the Patriots game. All of a sudden, he had like four or five receptions in the very first drive for the Raiders. Then all of a sudden, it's like you steer away from that. Certain things that just don't make sense right now when it comes to this offense. And there's no reason that our offense shouldn't be scoring or averaging 21 to 24 points a game. Like, there's no reason we should be at the bottom of the barrel right now.
Yeah, Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about the starting lineup for the Raiders, or at least the ESPN depth chart, because that's what I'm going to go off. Jimmy Garoppolo, quarterback, as we have. Hoyer, QB2, somehow. Aiden O'Connell behind him as the rookie Purdue's leading passing yards guy, I think. Yeah, from last season. Josh Jacobs, running back, was backed up by Zamir White and former Lion Amir Abdullah. Then wide receivers, Davante Adams, potentially the best wide receiver in the league still. Jacoby Myers, Trey Tucker, Hunter Renfrow, tight end Michael Mayer, and Austin Hooper behind him. And then the starting offensive lineman, Colton Miller, who I was surprised to see is your highest cap hit on the team, which is pretty nuts. Dylan Parham, Andre James, Greg Van Rotten, and Thayer Mumford, backed up as well by a few people I recognize, Jermaine Illuminor being one. And then on defense, Max Crosby, everyone knows, Tyree Wilson as well, Malcolm Kuntz, Jerry Tillery, Billiel Nichols, Byron Young's back there too, who I really liked in the draft process. And then Diablo's obviously out, but there's Robert Spillane, Isaac Rochelle, can't read my own writing. Luke Masterson, you mentioned, is going to come back in, as well as Kanai Mauga. And then the back four, Nate Hobbs, Marcus Epps, Trayvon Merrick, who everyone loved in the draft process and fell somehow. I do not understand to this day how he came into the second round. I don't. And Marcus Peters, but Amik Robertson as well. And one of my draft crushes from last year, Jacorian Bennett, who I think has had a tough start to his Raiders career. But Ash, I'll come to you. What comes to mind when you have a look at that starting lineup? Because for my mind, that looks fine. Like, that it is not in the realm of a
Bears,
at least. But I mean, is very much, in my mind, better than a Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, like, there's stars. Obviously, Max Crosby is one of the best edge rushers in the league. Davante Adams, well, he was wide receiver one for a good couple of years, obviously with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, but he's still got some of the best separating skills in the league. Mayer, to sort of go over the rookie tight ends, maybe he hasn't had the impact that obviously our guy has, but he's still a very, very good tight end. He was tight end one, supposedly, in that class. It's just probably how he's been utilized. Myers is a sneaky good wide receiver too. Like, I have him on fantasy and he's been putting up some points for me, so I'm happy for him. But yeah, it's just a good, solid, consistent team across the board. Like, obviously, I do the game previews and I look at all the team and I'm like, this is a team that is better than the record it's got. Like, it should be at least 500, in my opinion. Like, you've got team players there. It's just not all come together. And we've seen that with our teams, with the Lions, especially under Patricia, where we had Matt Stafford, we had Kenny Golladay for a while, we had Golden Tate before we traded away, Darius Slay before we traded away, and we just couldn't win games. And you could never work out why. I think that's what's happening here, where you just, it's not all coming together for some reason, unfortunately.
Emma, what do you feel about this team when you have a look at that starting lineup? Do you feel that it is underachieving?
I think it's underachieving, but at the same time, it's like the little things here and there that have caused these problems to happen. Like, realistically, like you guys just talked about our offense and our defense. This should have been a team, realistically, at this point in time, that should be well over 500. Like, some of the losses that should not have happened, including this recent game against the Bears, this could have been a five and one team. We're in week eight right now.
Yeah,
they could have been like a 6-1, maybe a 5-2 team. And it's mind blowing that we sit here and have these conversations, because we look at certain things that happen throughout some of these games and it's just like, had this not happened, but it's also a woulda, coulda, shoulda. Like that game against the Steelers, Marcus Peters had a ball come right to him, had it in his hands for a pick six, and he dropped it. Against the Chargers, first and goal on the 4-yard line, you decide to call a pass and it's intercepted, and that's the game for us. Like, stupid little things like that is why we're in the situation that we're in right now.
Yeah, and just looking at those games that I listed out, you mentioned Pittsburgh and the Chargers. I don't think anyone's calling them good teams right now. And you were beaten by, at the time, was a good Buffalo Bills side. But other than that, losing to the Bears, and we'll come on to that specifically later, has to go down as bad losses. But then your wins have been narrow as well. 1 point against Denver, 4 points against the Packers, 4 points against Patriots. Like, you're not blowing teams away when you win, and you're losing closely bar one. So it's the epitome of a you know, mid-table good team who, you know, maybe, but they have the specialist players that should be able to do the stuff you need. And I guess that's why Devontae felt like he had to go out and say, give me the ball, which was one of the more odd moments of the entire NFL season to me, because he didn't do it in any sort of way to throw shade at the team. It was literally just, use me more, I want to win games, you know?
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Like, all he wants to do is win. And I'm glad that you see it that way, because a lot of other people are like, no, this is just your typical diva wide receiver. And it's like, he said it in a press conference a couple of weeks ago. Of like, we give the ball to 9 different guys and we score, like, we score 20 points. Like, I'm not happy about that. But if we're giving it to 2 guys and they're putting up 50 points or 90 points, whatever, like, cool, that's a good win. But again, he's not happy with the production of this offense. He's not happy with the points that these guys are putting up on the board. And I would be just as frustrated playing for the Raiders right now. But even as a fan, I'm completely pissed off with this right now.
Yeah. And I mean, he's used to being fed the ball. I mean, the Packers famously never invested at wide receiver until he left. And, right, you know, he got 60% of the targets and 70% of the catches, and they function fine as an offense. So he absolutely has done that in the past. So it's not like he's asking for anything he hasn't done before. And spreading it out is fine if you're scoring, but if you're not scoring, then it's like, come on. Let's talk more about this team in general. So the disconnect between PFF and DVOA stats is stark. PFF has a team 17th overall, offense is 19th, defense is 14th. DVOA has the team 30th overall, 31st on offense, and 25th on defense. So could not be more different, which I think the truth has to be somewhere in the middle. I don't think that this team is the 14th best defense in the league from what I've seen. I don't know about you, Hammer, but that seems fairly high. But then to say that the offense is 31st by DVOA seems like a massive disservice as well.
Offensively? No. Offensively right now, that sounds about right. Defensively, especially with the 2 previous games with the Patriots and the Packers, the takeaways that we had, that pretty much like puts the stamp down for our defense and where we should be. Like, even last year, like, we finished like 26th in the league in overall defense, and it was like, going into this season, I was projecting like, hey, maybe 18 to 20, and that's still a vast improvement. Right now, they have it slated as us being like 14th or 15th. Actually, that's pretty accurate right now. And right, again, the takeaways are playing a huge role in that.
So let's take a focus at the offense, Ash. I'm going to take you through some of the stats and then let's feedback on them. So Garoppolo, obviously, has been out for 2.5 games, but he's had 100 catches on 147 attempts, 1,079 yards, 7 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 82.6 passer rating, 46.5 QBR, PFF grade of 68.7. Josh Jacobs is still the leading rusher despite some issues there. 118 carries, 347 yards, so 2.9 yards per carry average. 2 touchdowns for him in the passing game, 26 of 39 for 215. PFF grade for him of 63.2. Devontae Adams, we've mentioned, he's got 46 catches on the season on 71 targets. 11.5 yards a catch, although for some reason I didn't actually put the damn yardage down for him on the season because I suck at my job. So let me go and quickly check that. Devontae has 528 yards. Other good grades in there by PFF, Colton Miller with an 83 grade. I did say he had the highest cap on the team, so well done to him for backing it up. Thayer Mumford at right tackle, 75. Greg Van Rotten, 72. Jacoby Myers, 71.9. Andre James, the center, 71.7. Dylan Parham, the other guard, 68.9. So, Ash, across the board, all of the offensive line are in the good books. Bad grades, the fullback, Hunter Renfrow and Austin Hooper. So what have been peripheral players so far? So, you know, that offensive line apparently is doing fine.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed when I was looking, doing my game previews. One thing I did to sort of focus in a bit on Jimmy, I haven't really seen much of the tape, but something I saw on this PFF, for some reason, whenever he targets the left-hand side of the field, his grade just plummets horrifically. So I was looking, when he so for example, when he targets the intermediate middle, so 10 to 20 yards in the middle, 91.7 grade, elite. When he targets out the intermediate left, 32.6. So he must, so I don't know, it mightn't be the scheme with just where you're putting the receivers in that, but for some reason, whenever he targets his blind side, he's just horrifically inefficient. So hopefully that's something we can exploit, especially since, thankfully for us, that's where Cam Sutton usually lines up for. So for us to have our best corner in where Jimmy's supposedly worst, to playing a bit into the Dan Campbell, we'll put our best on your worst, which we didn't really do last week. So hopefully this can be a good reset by actually scheming up the defense right. So that's something we can definitely.
Yeah,
got, I was going to say, like, especially after, as I said last week, where we were focusing too much on the scrambling. This week, we don't have to worry about that. We can just sort of pass rush. We don't really have to worry about scrambling. Like, Jimmy can move a tiny bit. He's like Goff. He's a bit sneaky. He can scramble and get you yards when he needs it, but he's not exactly going to do a Lamar Jackson on you like he did, Lamar did to us last week. So I hope that's good for our defensive line, where we could just focus on pass rushing. The corners can hopefully just trust that the pass rush will get home because they're not really trying to contain. They're just trying to get to Jimmy. So they won't have to cover for 9.8 seconds. So the QB can find a receiver open in the back of the end zone for a touchdown. Like, it's going to be one of those, hopefully, where it happened that week two and against Seattle, where the defense just got it horrifically wrong. We reset, and for the next 3-4 weeks, we were great. That's what we need to see from Aaron Glenn here again. We need to see him reset, go back to basics, just do what we do, because otherwise I'm going to be pulling my hair out on stream again.
I haven't been so triggered by a play as the Aaron Rodgers Hail Mary since that Lamar Jackson play where he had 9.8 seconds to throw the damn ball. Like, come on. Jimmy G is starting. Brentley's been not cleared, but the head coach has said he's playing, so he's playing. I actually didn't finish off by saying the efficiency stats. So on third down, 35% is 25th. On fourth down, they've made it 8 of 9 attempts. That's first in the NFL. Red zone, 10 touchdowns on 24 trips, 41.7% is 25th. Hammer, you've mentioned that this offense is deservedly 31st by DVOA, but I mean, the stats aren't awful when it comes to that sort of production. You know, the most glaring thing, I guess, is Garoppolo's interceptions, and he has not been as accurate with the ball as you would like from someone coming out of a system in San Francisco that rewards accuracy above all else, because it's a tempo offense. You need it to be, you know, it's short passing, but put it on the money, because, you know, you lose such momentum when you don't do that. And coming in, Josh Jacobs in the backfield, you feel like that was going to be a match made in heaven. The head coach, he's worked with him before. It was a long time ago, but, you know, they should have some chemistry there. So what's happened, especially with an offensive line that PFF has graded pretty well? And I'm going to question that with you, because I don't believe that massively. Hoyer had some time last week to throw against a Bears front that is pretty crap, to say the least. But in the running game especially, I don't think that they've been opening the holes you would want for Jacobs. And in pass protection, I think they've been fine, but I don't think they're setting the world on fire yet. They're pretty well graded.
In the red zone, for a 41% percentage in the red zone is just god-awful. And all the opportunities you've had down there to actually score and make something happen. But again, you're steering away from things that you could, like the McDaniels offensive scheme is supposed to be successful. And in the red zone was one of those. Like, back in the day, you had the Patriots using Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, that deadly two tight end duo, no pun intended, guys. Rest in peace, Aaron Hernandez. But those guys would be being utilized on seam routes and in the middle, and they were the guys that were always scoring in the red zone. You brought in a two-time Pro Bowler in Austin Hooper. You got one of the best tight ends in this draft class in Michael Mayer, and you're not utilizing them down there. You have the elite of the elites in Devontae Adams. Granted, there was one pass that was thrown to him last week against the Bears that was in his hands over the shoulder, and he didn't catch it. And it's just like, what the hell is going on right now? when it comes to the offensive line, Greg Van Roten, who was a guy that we thought was going to be that answer in replacement of Alex Barrs at the guard position, just seems not to be doing the job right now. And with what we saw out of that offensive line last year and the run blocking specifically, especially with Jakob Johnson in the backfield leading the way for Josh Jacobs, it's like you're steering away from this stuff now. Why? Like, the I formation was great. You're not establishing the run like you were last year. Establish a run, you're going to open up the opportunities for other things, play action, deep balls when necessary, or when possible, rather. But, like, just a lot of this stuff has not worked out this year. That's why, like, I'm hearing you explain, like, talk about these grades right now as it pertains to the Raiders, and it's like, this is real right now? Like, like, what are they watching that I'm not? Because a lot of the numbers right now, and this is why I'm one person, I know numbers. I hated math, but was in honors math. But I hate analytics. Play the game. Play the game. And watch the game. Watch game film. Because all those metrics and stuff, it doesn't measure what really happens out there. And I'm so over analytics already.
I'm sorry that I'm going to hit you with some more defensive analytics in a minute. But I'm with you.
It's like Ant's here. He's not currently here because he's at work, but we've still got his attitude. Because he's the same. Me and Matt always put down his extent. Matt Ant's always just like, shut up. Just watch. I do agree. Obviously, that's my niche is I use the analytics because I don't really have access too much to game tape like the journalists. But I do completely agree that analytics only tell you half the story. There should be supplementing game tape at best. Because, yeah, you can say, oh, yeah, this person didn't give up a sack. In reality, they missed their blocking assignment, so the other person took on two defenders at once and gave up a sack. You have to supplement it. I completely agree.
I think it gives you opportunities to go back and have a look back at what the analytics are telling you and to see whether it's legit or not. If your entire opinion is analytics, then you're doing it wrong. I completely agree. It's not a replacement for your eyes. And
ask the Chargers about that, because look at what Staley does on these 4th-and-1 situations. Like 9 times out of 10, he wants to go for it. And his reason behind it all the time is, well, analytics says this, dude, stop, put down the controller, stop playing Madden, and really learn how to coach. Like this is analytics being done completely wrong.
Yeah. He overdoes it. I mean, our coach himself, especially in his first season, was very aggressive on 4th down, but we had good 4th down calls and a really good offensive line. So 4th and short situations were more advantageous to us. I don't think the Chargers have that excuse. So even if the analytics say it, it doesn't take into account what the hell's happening in the game. It all comes in as part of
the personnel is out there. Like, yeah. And you know what? I can give you guys props for the week 1 matchup against the Chiefs and that fake punt pass that you guys went for. It was a fake punt run. But I was like, whoa, the Lions are not playing around this season.
They love to do the up man run on those fake punts. It was reminiscent of the Rams game year 1 with Dan Campbell.
The CJ Moore. And we did it last year against the Packers. We had a 26-yard run.
Godwin BK, wasn't it?
CJ Moore.
That was CJ Moore again.
Right. My former favorite special teamer until he decided to bet on the NFL like a dumb. Broke my heart, he did.
Yeah, not the best. Right, let's turn our attention to the Raiders defense. And statistical leaders, Spillane, the linebacker, leads a team in tackles, but he also actually leads the team in interceptions after getting 2 against the Packers, which was just so beautiful. 2 passes defended as well, 1 sack, 57 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, a quarterback hit, PFF grade 71.8. Max Crosby, though, is the heartbeat of the team, at least in my opinion. 1 pass defended, 6.5 sacks, 40 tackles, 9 tackles for a loss, and 9 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 91.1. Marcus Peters is potentially, is he the best DBT on the team? I don't know, but I've got him listed here myself. He's the guy I picked out. 3 passes defended, 30 tackles, tackle for a loss, PFF grade of 65.8. But Trevon Merrick is there too. 2 interceptions, 4 passes defended, 36 tackles, a quarterback hit, and PFF grade 71.4. Other good grades in there? Nate Hobbs, the cornerback, 72.7, and defensive tackle Jenkins, 72.1. Other worst grades in there, Tyree Wilson, 8th overall, 42.3. Ja'Corian Bennett, my guy, 43.1, the corner. Otherwise, a guy that we tried to claim, Ash, in Jerry Tillery, the defensive tackle, 52.3, and the cornerback, Amik Robinson, 54.6. In terms of efficiency, they've allowed 41 of 90 on third down. That's 45.6%, which is 26th. 5 of 8 on fourth down, that's 62.5%, which is 25th. And in the red zone, they've allowed 17 touchdowns on 23 trips, which is 73.9%, good for 29th in the NFL. So, Hammer, come back to you. The defense as a whole is good, and I've seen it do good things. It holds teams to low point numbers. It gets good takeaways. But those stats don't lie in the red zone. When it gets down to the 20s, you guys aren't keeping anyone out.
Nope. And it's really lack of discipline at times, because it'll be like one bonehead penalty that gets them even closer, and the opposing team is punching it in. Like you talked about Ja'Corian Bennett. Ja'Corian Bennett in coverage is right now decent. He's gotten his tackles in, and Ja'Corian Bennett was a guy that I was incredibly high on in the draft. I must have drafted him like 25 to 30 times when I was doing mock drafts. Like, I loved what he was doing at Maryland. But again, this is the defense as a whole that plays a part in this, and Patrick Graham's style of defense. Now, when he was brought in, he was asked what type of defense he likes to run, what's his base, and he says it's a little bit of everything. He has a hybrid style of defense. Wrong. He loves to run the zone. He loves to run the nickel package. And it's like, think about the guys that you have in your personnel and think about playing more to their strengths, and this defense could be a hell of a lot better. Now, Marcus Peters was a guy that I wanted here, a vet, a guy that had ties to Oakland anyways, as he grew up in the area. His cousin is Marshawn Lynch. I had the opportunity to meet Marcus Peters at the Pro Bowl, and he said he wanted to be here. And months later, he ended up in the silver and black. Again, one bad miss on against the Steelers. He had a pick six in his hands and just went right through him. Trayvon Merrick, a guy, is kind of bouncing back right now. Trayvon Merrick was a guy that in year one, it seemed like no quarterback in the league really wanted to test him. Last year was dealing with a hip injury and just was a flop last year. This was another guy going into this season I thought was going to have a bounce back year. He wasn't the guy that I had on my radar. Well, I had him on my radar, but he was a 1B for the safety of that draft class. I wanted Javon Holland in the worst way possible. Mm-hmm. And of course, like you said, Max is the heart and soul of that defense. Spillane at the linebacker position, he's leading the league and leading the team in tackles. He leads in interceptions. Robert Spillane, when we signed him in free agency, was a guy that was like, this is definitely not the sexiest pickup in free agency at the linebacker position. Let's see what he can do. Dude's wearing the green dot, and he's been holding his own for this defense. It's more the interior than anything else, because it starts up front. It starts with that front seven. That includes the linebackers, but the interior needs to apply more pressure. They have to be able to stop the run. You cause that pressure, you're going to open up the opportunities for these quarterbacks to want to force balls in places they shouldn't be, and that would just be beneficial for our secondary. Secondary should be able to capitalize on that, and cause more turnovers. But again, you're staying in this zone defense, which is dead and gone, and you're not switching up the formations. You're not going 3-4. You're not going 4-3. You're not going bare. You continue to stay in this nickel formation right now, and it's really not helping the cause for this defense.
Yeah, inflexibility, perhaps. Ash, have you seen much of this Raiders defense?
Not a lot, again, but something that I definitely agree with is the inflexibility in terms of the back end in the defense. So again, one of the things I look at for the preview is I use this website that basically charts what personnel each team uses snap to snap, and I look at that. And yet all the Raiders seem to play is Nick, or whether it's most common is obviously the 4-2-5 with two linebackers, four down linemen in the nickel package. But yeah, all the other ones are just 3-3-5, which was admittedly is, I think it's what Patrick Mahomes was good at, because that's when he was in New York. That was his big thing, was that he was playing this 3-3-5 system. It's brought over from the Patriots, where the third linebacker was actually an overhang safety. Jabril Peppers famously playing that role and having his career resurgence after going to New York from Cleveland. And it worked for him. He had some good defenses there. They were better than some of the parts, but they weren't exactly elite. And yet then he goes to Oakland when the regime changes to New York. And it seemed like he'd gone down a bit like 2 years ago. Patrick Graham was probably one of those big head coach candidates that probably would have got Matt Patricia looks, where he's doing better than he's doing with some of his parts, gets a head coaching job, and he would have probably done okay at that. But yeah, it's just not worked out for him. But this piece is there. Like, Peters has always been that kind of guy that can force turnovers. He was Trayvon Diggs before Trayvon Diggs was around. He might give up a big play every now and then, but he'd also come up with a pick six every game. It was mad. I remember him the last, I think, because when I was really getting to the NFL, was when he was in his last years in Kansas City, where he was really making the claim. Really good corner, and it's a really good pickup. I also love Jacorian Bennett in the draft. I did when we did our little draft preview on the corners, I reviewed him, and I liked him as well. I would have picked him up for us in like the third round. Obviously it didn't happen, and yeah, that's what I did see in him, was his consistent coverage, can make the tackles, but yes, sometimes can give it the big play because of his size, because he's not the biggest guy ever. I think he's 5'10", 5'11", 185. So unless he's put a bit of bulk on, he will get bullied. He will get bullied at the NFL level for now. And also, I remember Mo Rigg. I won't say who a certain member of our podcast likes over Mo Rigg, because we didn't get them and they went infamously to the Falcons. But we were all pretty high on Trayvon Merrick in the draft as well when we were looking for a safety. Instead, we took two defensive tackles, one of whom is a rotational guy and the other is a beast. But listening to the watching a bit of the Raiders and obviously listening to your Hammer, we have similar problems. Like, it sounds kind of similar. Bit of lack of interior pressure. The corners, we're maybe playing a bit too much zone on the back end, giving QBs easy completions. But the veteran linebacker who everyone sort of wrote off, you give them a veteran contract and they've got the green dot and the ball now. Sounds like us, to be honest, especially last week. But with Alex Anzalone's being our sort of Robert Spillane, us playing a lot of zones, we were getting absolutely picked apart. And then last week, just getting no pressure at all. Like, Hutchinson, much like probably Crosby hasn't for you guys, he hasn't been getting much help outside of maybe the Bucks and Falcons games, and Bucks, Falcons, and Panthers. Every other game, he's pretty much had to do it all by himself. So it sounds kind of similar to you guys.
I'll tell you one thing right now, I'm most definitely nervous about this coming Monday night is Aiden Hutchinson, because I feel like he gets through that offensive line and gets to Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, I feel like Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be in for a world of hurt if Aiden Hutchinson gets a hold of him. And at the same time, like, you guys have really turned this team around within the last 2 years. And going into this season, I had had the Lions projected to win the NFC North. They were so close to getting into the playoffs last year. And I'm not going to lie, I was definitely rooting for you guys last year towards the tail end. I was like, I hope they get this. I really hope that they finally get this opportunity, because I do believe Dan Campbell is a very good coach for you guys. He holds these guys accountable for everything. And he just seems to be exactly what the opposite of what Josh McDaniels is not. And Dan Campbell is a leader of men. And it shows week in and week out with what he's done with this Lions organization over the last two seasons.
Yeah, the ultimate guy in terms of not judging a book by its cover. And he very much displayed that cover in his opening press conference and pulled the wool over everyone's eyes. I kind of feel like that was very much a performance by a skilled actor as much as anything else. I'm going to talk about the Bears game very briefly and then come on to the key matchups for this game now that we've got acquainted with the Raiders. So on offense for the Bears game, finish up Bears 30, Raiders 12. But I thought it was a promising start on offense for the Raiders. I mean, there was plenty of misdirection. There was a jet sweep on the second play. There was a Hoyer fake handoff RPO out of the strong eye on a slant play to Devontae. And I was like, this looks smooth. Very scripted, obviously, in those first few plays, but it looked like it was working. He proceeded down the field very well. Devontae got four targets on that first drive. So, you know, he had his little complaint and he was very much getting fed the ball and it was working. Couldn't hang on to a one-handed grab, unfortunately, but, you know, you stall out and then the field goal was no good. And it kind of felt like the tide started to turn. Following that on offense, Hoyer had his interception, which was slightly unfortunate. I mean, he absolutely fired it over the middle from a short distance. I mean, as much as Hoyer can rifle a ball, he did fire it in. And the receiver just kind of batted it up a little bit straight into Tremaine Edmonds' hands. It was unlucky. Like, I'm not putting that on the quarterback massively. It could have been directed slightly better, but it wasn't egregious. And then Hoyer had a nice drive until he almost threw into a busted running back screen. You got into the red zone at some point, and then you had a false start and then a holding penalty to be first and 25 from the 40-yard line. And it's like, as much as anything, it just felt like you were shooting yourselves in the foot more than anything. The offense was actually working fine against the Bears, and it just didn't happen. You seem to pick on Jalen Johnson a little bit. Got two DPI calls from him, and it looked like you identified a weakness. He then came back and got two picks late, which seemed pretty unfortunate to me, because I don't think Jalen had a particularly good game on defense for the Bears. But it seemed like you tried to use plenty of misdirection with fakes, but they were snuffed out quite well by Chicago. And I don't know whether that was a Chicago defense playing well. I happen to think that defense is poor. So I feel like maybe it was just the design was fairly obvious. There was one in the red zone where you had a fake run to the right and a flip to Jacobs to the left-hand side. And there were three defenders there and two offensive blockers. And it's like, what are we doing here, guys? I'll stop there on offense. But Hammer, does that resonate with you and what happened in that game? Because it felt like the offense was moving fine.
There were reports that were out there that apparently that the Bears knew on several occasions what the plays were being run or the plays that were being called. And it's just like,
oh, they weren't seeing signs, were they?
You stole my joke.
No. I don't think they were stealing signs, but like at times when it comes to this McDaniels offense, like a lot of the stuff is predictable and it's frustrating to see, but it's incredibly predictable. And it's just like some of the plays that were run, and at the same time, like even against our defense going against a quarterback, an undrafted quarterback nonetheless, out of a Division II school, we have the tendency, for whatever reason it is, to play down to competition like this. And we end up losing as a result. Like you talked about the offense in the red zone and having the back-to-back penalties and shooting themselves in the foot. Typical us. Like this happens year in and year out. And you would think that the change of the guard, the discipline would have been a little bit better. You would think that the Patriot way instills discipline, and it doesn't. Illuminor last year had like a dozen false start penalties. And yet him and Colton Miller were ranked 10th as the best tackle tandem in the league last season. He's still doing the same stuff in regards to the false starts. Some of these guys can't hold their blocks long enough. And if they're not holding their blocks long enough, it turns into a hug fest and we're getting 10 yards against us. Like, it's the same thing every single game right now. And I went on my rant earlier this week where I've gotten to that point. Like, Josh McDaniels needs to go. People have asked me, who do I think the interim head coach should be? It should be Rob Ryan. Rob Ryan has that Raider attitude, has that Raider mentality. And that's the type of leader that this organization needs right now.
I love that. I've actually seen his name come up a few times in terms of interim potential coaching jobs and people just being horrified by it. But it's not like Rob Ryan teams were uncompetitive through his tenure, wherever he's been. I know that he's a divisive figure, but it's mainly because I think he's not the guy you want, because he's probably not going to push you over the top, but he's going to bring you to 500 and the football's going to look good. So I feel like the Raiders could do with that. I'm on board with it. You're getting some love from the Twitch chat, by the way. A few people saying, I like this guy and I've been butted up, which is really nice. So that's cool.
But you guys, thank you.
Defense on this game. Crosby wrecking things all day. I mean, they were running away from him and it was very, very obvious to me. I mean, smart plan though, right? The Bears had plenty of reverses, jet sweeps, and a proper reverse quite early. You held them fairly well in those situations because, you know, with reverses, if they work, they're going for 50. Yeah, they just do. And you held them to eight and a jet sweep for two and all this sort of stuff. It was quite good. You read things well. But it feels like the interior of the defensive line, you mentioned about the run defense struggles. I mean, Foreman's first and second touchdowns were just interior pressure by their O-line on your D-line. They impose their will, double teams. I did think it was weird on first and goal from like your three that you just played four up front and your two linebackers didn't come crashing down. It's like, okay, this is good.
What we did, and this is our problem. This is what we don't do and this is what we should be doing. Like, I wish I was in that position. I would much rather, and people have asked me this before, like, if you could be a coach, what would you want to coach? And me, like, I grew up playing receiver and linebacker, but I love the defense. And I think that I'd be able to make the right personnel decisions and put these guys in the right positions right now where they can make stops on shortened distance situations, third and long. I know what I would dial up, and I would not keep my defense in zone. If I see things, I would make the necessary adjustments. And that's what it seems like is not being done in out of Patrick Graham. He's not making the necessary adjustments right now for this Raiders defense.
Yeah, I didn't really have much else to say in this game. Like, sometimes they didn't flow to the ball quick enough, but I feel like you guys just looked a bit gassed at that time. Peters had a really good PBU on a fade later on. But then the Foreman touchdown in the passing game, in the flat, just one weak arm tackle and he strides in. But he's just the strongest guy. I wanted him so badly in free agency, and it's a good pickup for the Bears. Special teams. Carson, we mentioned his struggles in the game generally just because of injury.
Yep.
Good punter. But also, the onside kick late. I just want to talk to you about this because special teams be damned most of the time, right? But I have been wanting this onside kick to be played for so long because it's the most obvious way to get the ball back now, right? You can try and hit it 10 yards and recover it, but that's not working. So just blast it into the lineman trying to recover the ball and then try and catch it. It was so good. I was like, yes, finally.
And this is why we call Daniel Carlson the sniper. Like, he was spot on with that. But at the same time, like, these guys are still waiting for the ball to clear 10 yards. So, like, they're looking and trying to stay up with the ball. But eventually the Bears recovered and that was that. But that was definitely one of the best onside kicks I've seen in a very long time. Granted, we didn't get it back. It was, I couldn't stop laughing when I saw it.
Right, let's come on to the key matchups of the game, and let's start with the Raiders' run offense against the run defense of the Lions. Ash, it's a team coming in from last year that's got the rushing king, and the offensive line apparently is playing well per PFF. So you might say, with the Lions not being able to stop the run particularly well last week, that this might be advantage Raiders. But actually, thinking about it for a second, the Raiders have struggled to run the ball, and the Lions' run defense has come to play this season apart from last week. So what do you make of this matchup?
I think, fingers crossed, touch wood and that, we should be able to do it. Obviously, with Benito being questionable this week, we could see the first proper game snaps for our third-round rookie, Broderick Martin, who was brought in to be a big run-stuffing guy. He has pass rush upside, as obviously everyone should know if you watch Matt and Ant do the tape breakdown on him. But first and foremost, he's a big motherfucker brought in to stop the run. And that's what the Raiders like to do. They like to run inside zones. But they're especially weak on the outside, like doing the game preview. Running off left tackle, 1 yard a carry. If you guys try and run it left off the tackles, Anzalone and Barnes and Campbell are just going to crash down and have their day. Like Campbell didn't have a good week last week, but that's arguably because he was being played more as an outside 3-4 outside linebacker than an actual traditional off ball, not putting him in good positions. This week, hopefully, with Charles Harris hopefully active instead of being a healthy scratch for reasons unknown, we should be able to put him in positions to succeed. So hopefully we should just be able to crash down in the run, because that's one of the keys for me. I know the Raiders are 32nd in run rush yards per game. We should stop the run first and foremost, because that'll put him in put you in third and longs, so we can pin our ears back and Harris, Hutch, Aleem can just go for Jimmy and someone to have to worry about, are they going to hand it off in a third and two and convert because we're overshooting to try to get to Jimmy. We need to shut down the run.
Hammer, how do you see this? Because you called earlier on for the Raiders to more successfully run the ball to open up things for the passing game. Do you think you can do that?
It's going to be a tough task. Again, you got a guy on your line in Aiden Hutchinson that pretty much has done it all within the first 2 years of him being in the league. Our offensive line just needs to step it up tremendously. And like I said, after week two of the season where we hadn't given up a single sack, all of a sudden it's gone downhill for whatever reason, but the offensive line has crumbled. And I've said this time and time again, anybody that knows football, if your offensive line doesn't work, your offense is not going to work. And these guys, Monday night game under the lights, and somebody in chat had asked if we are to get blown out, let alone lose Monday night, is McDaniels gone? No, because we know the type of team that the Lions are this year. Again, they're definitely bound for big things this year. This 5-game stretch that we had, I had us going at least 4-1, and the only loss was going to be to you guys. But seeing that matchup you guys had last week against the Ravens, I don't know. I really don't know what to expect right now. You got Jahmyr Gibbs, who's probably going to be anchoring the running backs for you guys this week. As you stated, David Montgomery is out, who I had on my fantasy team, so I'm a little disappointed that he is out. But again, our problem right now, even on the defensive side of the ball, is stopping the run. So it's like, how do you expect to stop the likes of Jahmyr Gibbs? How do you expect to stop the likes of one of the top receivers in the league in Amon-Ra St. Brown? Like, this is going to be a game that it could be close depending on how things look at the start of the game, or it could get ugly incredibly quickly. That's going to come down to the coaching, and it's going to come down to the players in the silver and black.
Let's talk about the other side of the offense for the Raiders then. So the passing offense against the pass defense. I mean, in Adams and Myers, you've got two of the wide receivers that I like most in the NFL. Myers is so underrated at what he does. He was great with the Patriots the last couple of years. He's coming for you. And really, he's been taking Adams' targets for the better part of the season, at least from my perspective. And I think he's done pretty well with it as well, given the level of quarterback play that's been thrown at him. With Jimmy back, hopefully for you guys firing on all cylinders and not doing what he's been showing earlier on, there could be signs of life here. And, you know, Hunter Renfrow, I know he might be on the block, but we know what he's capable of, what he's done in the past. And you've mentioned the tight ends. Mayer looked to be rolling against the Bears a little bit. I think he had a few nice catches. Hooper, formerly the highest paid tight end in the NFL. People seem to forget that somehow. He's there too. And the offensive line pass blocking maybe is better than run blocking. So against the Lions pass defense, they got shredded by Lamar Jackson, and admittedly in an MVP performance by Lamar, but he's not exactly vaunted for his arm, or he wasn't until this season. The Lions pass defense is perhaps not at its best moment right now. So Hammer, your passing offense, I think, has a chance in this game.
I think our passing offense might, but at the same time, we have to take into consideration what we talked about earlier in regards to Hunter Renfrow. Now, if there's anybody calling in for Hunter Renfrow services right now, as we get even closer to Monday night, do not be surprised if Hunter Renfrow is listed as inactive this coming Monday night in the event that there is a team that is willing to make this trade come Tuesday afternoon. That's one thing that a lot of people, I don't think many people are even thinking about right now, but there's a chance. I don't know what great a chance it is, but there could be that one phone call and Josh McDaniels, Dave Ziegler, Mark Davis will all get together and be like, no, he's inactive. If this deal's about to happen, we're not going to put him at risk. God forbid something happens and then we don't get what we want or the trade doesn't go through like it needs to. Jacoby Myers, he signed with us during the offseason. Devontae Adams co-signed on this where he felt that the Patriots underutilized and undervalued Jacoby Myers tremendously. Funny enough, they went out and got a free agent receiver for the same amount of money that Jacoby Myers is getting with us. So we see what they're doing in New England right now. We see what Jacoby has done for us, especially when his number is dialed up. You talked about the numbers in regards to Garoppolo throwing to the left side, more or less the left side outside the hash. It's like, dude, you need to get this together. You have your elite receiver on the left. This is the guy that's supposed to be doing things and doing big things. Like, this is definitely the lowest numbers-wise for Tay in his career. Like, he put up solid numbers last year, reuniting with Derek Carr. He put up incredible numbers throughout his first couple of years with Aaron Rodgers. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo needs to wake the hell up and get it together with Devontae Adams and fix that chemistry quick, fast, and in a hurry. Hooper, Mayer, get these guys involved this week. Get these guys involved by any means necessary, and it should be able to take care of itself. But they also need to be smart about Jimmy needs to be smart about where he's throwing, the type of coverage he's throwing into, and not getting those happy feet and like just starting to panic when he's in the pocket. Like, have some poise and make things happen, because there's no reason that you can't score points. Again, with all these weapons you have around you, that red zone efficiency needs to step up tremendously this coming Monday night.
Ash, what do you make of this matchup? Because the Lions' pass defense has taken a hit after, you know, completely turning it around from last season where they were basically dead last in the NFL to one of the better units in the league. And then Lamar comes along and potentially shatters that mentality versus Garoppolo, who, I mean, dare I say that I feel like a bit of what happened to Jared Goff in LA has happened to Garoppolo, where Garoppolo's kind of been... He got to how many consecutive NFC Championship games with the 49ers, and they've gone, no, we need an upgrade. We're going to dump him. And he's kind of, I don't know, not his feelings have been hurt, but his confidence seems to have taken a hit. And, you know, maybe that takes time, especially in a new system, even with a familiar head coach, to kind of get back. Maybe the break of a game is what he needed.
Yeah. So hearing the description, Jimmy G, it did remind me of 2021 Jared Goff, albeit Jimmy has a lot more weapons. Like, Jared Goff was throwing to bloody Khalif Raymond and as our ex receiver for half the season before Amari broke out. He was supposed to be throwing to bloody Rashard Perriman and
Tyrell Williams,
who you are aware of.
Oh, Hammers should be very aware of Tyrell Williams.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just
Williams.
But I mean, we had half a game of him before he took a concussion in against the 49ers and then medically retired. Like, great. Like, obviously, no ragging on Brad Holmes for that. Took the Flyers on weapons we needed when the cap hit was low. It does sound like that. And looking at us, yeah, Lamar tore us apart last week. I put that down more to, as I know you do as well, Matt, down more to the coaching just putting us in those bloody soft zones, not tracking the linebackers being too far forward. There's a nice open gap between them and Kirby, who was obviously being put 15 yards back in single high all the time. And we didn't have Jerry. Like, I know, even I wasn't that high in Jerry coming into the season. I was like, he is preferably the first man off the bench for you. He's a good cornerback three. But if he's your cornerback one or two, there might be some problems. He's proven it this season. He can be a reliable cornerback too, because he's not having all the pressure on him, because Cam Sutton's doing his thing on the other side, just casually going about doing good things. So the pressure's not on him and he's playing well. He wasn't there last week because obviously he was injured. And we see what happens. As much as I love Will Harris, that was a bad performance for him. You get benched for Cleo Dorsey, who's only on the roster for special teams. You know stuff's not going well there. So having Jerry back, given that stability where we have two guys we can trust on the outside. Brian Branch now hopefully being fully back from his injury that kept him out for a while before the Ravens game. Manning down the slot. This is a guy who, in his first career game in the NFL, picks six, Patrick Mahomes, does everything for us. Going to be great. I know, obviously, as you say, you don't really utilize the slot receivers. Like, Renfrew's had 12, 15 targets on the season, only caught seven balls. Whatever's happened there, obviously, you're saying he'd probably get traded. Don't have to worry about that. So that frees up Branch to roam about a bit more, make some plays. I know Kirby's looking forward to this matchup. He's saying, yeah, I'm doing well, but I haven't got the turnovers I did last year. Talking about a guy who's the second guy ever to ever pick off Aaron Rodgers twice in the season, and he did it in his rookie season. The first one is Brian Urlacher. I can see that, considering that one of the Bears linebackers.
Yeah, sounds right.
But yeah, this hopefully should be a good match for Mr. Only One. The only, but as you say, Myers is a really good wide receiver too, and he's speedy. And Adams, just for some reason, always plays well against the Lions. Like, he is the big boogeyman for us in this passing attack. So if he can get going, it might be long for us. But if we can do what the Raiders did to us last week, to sort of minimize the passing attack for you guys and just come out and score ourselves on offense, it could be a long-ass day.
Flipping over to the other side of the ball, Lions run offense against the Raiders run defense. Another weird matchup coming into this because, you know, on the edges, perhaps the Raiders run defense is actually pretty good, but interior seems a bit weak. I know Jerry Tillery wasn't exactly vaunted before he came to the Raiders for his run defense, and he's very much a kind of pass rush upside sort of guy, but he's not had a good season. But the Lions run offense, you know, took a nosedive last week with Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, running the ball after coming off injury. I mean, the Lions had, was it less than 15 rushing yards in the first half last week, and really only started running the ball successfully once they went into prevent. You know, all of his yards basically were garbage time yards, which is a shame. He got his first rushing touchdown for the Lions in the NFL, but yeah, I don't feel that confident, Ash, with Gibbs being the lead back, even though, you know, we took him 12th overall and he's a spectacularly good player. Running between the tackles isn't his strong point, and that's where we need to run to win this game.
Yeah, it is looking like a Craig Reynolds game. And unfortunately, as much as we love Craig, his baseline is what Josh Jacobs is for you guys this season. If you block him 4 yards, he will get you those 4 yards, but won't get you that much more. Obviously, when it comes to pass blocking, that guy is elite. I wish I could insert the clip of him against Tampa Bay, just for everyone's enjoyment yet again, because that's probably right now my leading winner for moments of the season when we come to our end of season awards. Like, he's great at that, great team player, but he's not David Montgomery. Like, if we had David Montgomery, I would be hell a lot more optimistic. I would be predicting, like, massive amount of rushing yards. But with Gibbs, who is obviously outside zone kind of guy, counter, if you run him towards Crosby, he's just going to get folded up. We really need to basically just run it behind Saul. Saul against Decker, because Crosby obviously lineups mostly on the left-hand side of the Raiders' defense. That's where Saul is. That's going to be a matchup to watch. So we need to run it off Decker, who's obviously the weaker of the run blockers. So it's just going to be, if we're going to use him, just keep him getting outside, away from Crosby, target the outside, and then when we get into short situations, bring in Craig Reynolds, bring in Divine and Zigbo. I wish we had Mo Ibrahim, obviously. Hope he's doing okay with his dislocated hip / broken pelvis, what I'm doing last week on that kick return. Hope he's healing up, but he would have been so good in this game because he's the workhorse kind of guy. You could have just ran him between the tackles again and again, and he would have just bowled through. So, yeah, it's not a good matchup for our run offense, to be honest.
Hammer, what do you make of this? Because our interior of the offensive line is missing potentially all three starters. It depends whether Vitae can go, but we've got backups across there. It's where you might be weak in run defense, but it's where we might be weak too. So as Ash has been saying, Gibbs in outside zone running into the clutches of some of your outside linebackers and DNs. So it could be a lot closer than people expect.
I think Dan Campbell's going to be smart enough not to run to whatever side Max Crosby is on. Like, and that's pretty much where they're going to end up being able to get away with things on Monday night. Like, just staying away from Mad Max on the runs, at least. Like, again, our interior is not it right now. Tyree Wilson, which is a guy that I predicted was going to be a Raider, has been a disappointment so far. I've had people that have given me tons and tons of shit about Tyree Wilson, and rightfully so as of right now, but like at the same time, he missed a lot of time throughout the offseason. He didn't show back up until the tail end of the preseason. He's still trying to adjust to the speed at the next level, but as it stands right now, I really do think, like, for Jahmyr Gibbs to succeed, for this Detroit Lions offense to succeed with their run game, just stay away from Mad Max.
There we go. And the passing offense, Hammer, come back to you. So Lions pass offense against Raiders run, passing defense. Lions passing offense has been, I mean, pretty bloody good for the last 18 months, 2 years now. Without having the flashy guys in there, it's just pretty efficient with Goff kind of getting the ball where it needs to be. You mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown earlier, who's just running away with things right now. His fourth round pick just looks like a lot of teams missed out there. And, you know, people like Josh Reynolds have come alive and Khalif Raymond have been there. And now J-Mo's back too after, you know, 2 years of problems with him, really. But didn't get anything going against the Ravens. And, you know, really disappointed. Goff had a poor game and the game plan looked lacking. And this Raiders defense has really kept teams to low scoring. You know, we were talking about how the red zone doesn't look great for the Raiders, but you still kept the point score low. And I think that's because you've been preventing people getting to the red zone quite efficiently because your DBs and your linebackers have been doing a great job.
Yeah. When it comes to the secondary this week, like we talked about the injury report before, Hobbs is still questionable, so I'm guessing he's not going to be there. But Tyler Hall right now, him being a full participant and him potentially being back in the rotation at the slot corner position, like, will pay dividends. Like, he's done a good job when his number's been called up. The linebacking core has been doing a really good job too. Secondary at times, they just shoot themselves in the foot. It could be a defensive holding. It could be a defensive pass interference. It should have never happened. They just need to be a little bit more smarter about what they do, especially going against, like, St. Brown. I'm trying to figure out right now off the top of my head who is going to have him one-on-one. And from the looks of things, Jacorian Bennett is going to be back, but I have a feeling that it's going to be Peters that they put on St. Brown. So Goff is not that bad of a quarterback. He's definitely turned things around since he came to Detroit. Another guy that kind of has that incredibly quick release. So, like, I do feel that, like, our defensive line has to get there and try to get in his face, and they have to do it quick, fast, in a hurry, because if not, by the time they do get there, that ball is already going to be out of Goff's hands.
I got to say, I know I've not given too many opinions throughout the episode, but just on this point, because of the issues we have in the interior of the offensive line, I am really worried, and this is not the name I thought I'd bring up, I am really worried about Jerry Tillery, because he can pass rush from the interior. He hasn't done a lot of it, but he is good at that singular aspect of the game. He's going to be going up against maybe Vitae if he goes. If not Vitae, then our fifth-round rookie in Colby Sawstall, who has not covered himself in glory so far. I mean, he's a very young guy, not a lot of experience, so I don't think you can expect too much of him. But that's going to be worrying if that happens. If Vitae's in, Ash mentioned that he looked awful in terms of moving laterally, so Tillery's going to have the upper hand there. Graham Glasgow is going to be filling in at centre. He's played very well so far, but he was a backup at the start of the season for a reason. So let's see what happens with that. He's not done much snapping at centre in the last decade. You know, he started off there for the Lions before kicking out because Ragnow was here. But Ragnow isn't playing. Did he not? He started at centre.
No, he was our left guard. It was Travis Swanson at centre, Ragnow's first year before he went to the Jets for a year, got concussed and retired and became a mortgage broker. Good I love watch. That I know that, but it's because he interviewed for another podcast like 3 years ago and spoke about it. He was a lovely guy, but yeah, it was Frank at left, Swanson at centre, Frank at right guard, and then a backup was Joe Dahl, if you remember him.
Oh, remember Joe Dahl very well. He stuck around for a long time. And then left guard's going to be Keodi Awaseka. That is how you say his name.
Yes, thank you.
Awaseka. Yes, so he has come in a couple of games and he's been fine. but he's not a starting left guard in this league. So all three positions, you're looking at potential issues. And pass rush then from the interior is what I'm looking at. So Tillery is the guy. And if you can get pressure from Crosby, I have no doubt he'll get his wins against Sewell. I mean, Sewell hasn't given up a sack this year. So as Ash said, it's going to be a good matchup to watch. But with pressure coming from Max and possible pressure from the interior from Tillery, I can see Goff having some troubles in this game. So I do not think that this is just chalking up a win like a lot of the Lions fans think it's going to be, because I just don't see it at all. We're coming into the last part of the show and what I like to call keys to victory, which you might think we've covered already, and I really need to come up with a different name for this. But what I mean by this is we're working backwards from your team has won. So the Raiders have come out with a victory on Monday Night Football, going to the Lions, the 5-2 team, and you get to 500, Hammer, to close out this half of the season and to theorize on how that victory was made possible. So the Raiders have won a Monday Night Football, Hammer. How did it happen?
Luck. Like, look, against the Packers, they gave up that 77-yard bomb. Peters got a horse collar tackle, which actually was the smartest thing to do as opposed to letting them score, and we ended up getting the ball back. And then we get to the tail end of the game and Love is down. He tries to air it out and Robertson seals the deal with that interception in the end zone. I think that this matchup can go one of two ways. And if the Lions win, you're probably looking at a final score of 31-17. If we so happen are lucky enough to win this game, you're probably looking at 24-21.
Ash, the Lions have won. How did it happen? And give us a score prediction as well.
We won by making Jimmy just lay on flat on his back for most of the game by getting home and putting him under pressure. I think we're going to win. I think I've said in preview 27-17. We're going to win.
I'm going back and forth on this game because, you know, coming off a loss, the team's got to respond. And the team has responded well to losses in the last 18 months. I don't think we've lost many consecutive games in that stretch. But I'm looking at this game, I'm looking at the key injuries we have in key positions where it's a clear position of strength when we're healthy, and now suddenly it's not. And now counting on that to deliver us for a victory is kind of hard. How are we going to run the ball? The secondary is good for the Raiders. How are we going to pass the ball? You know, there are things on offense that I'm legitimately concerned about. And then Raiders on offense, you don't have Hoyer throwing the ball this week. That's a win. You know, you can't be moonballing it to Devontae Adams. That ball for that pick to Jalen Johnson moves so fucking slowly in the air. It's like, come on, just come down, please. You put him out of the misery. But so it's a blessing. I mean, for all parties in this game that Hoyer isn't playing this game. But for Jimmy, I just feel like if he can just even get a smidge of his San Francisco rhythm to him, because he's very much a rhythm confidence quarterback, give him a few easy completions early, get him in timing with Devontae and Jacoby, and it could be a long day for us. I mean, we're going to feel burnt from last week and they're going to want to make a statement. What worse a statement could be made than a Raiders opening drive touchdown, and things could spiral. Like, I don't think this is going to be the easy game people think it's going to be. I'm calling a Lions win because how can I not? But I see people out there, and Hammer, you said, you know, if the Lions win, it could be a 14-point win or something. I just don't see it. And I don't see many points in this game somehow either. The Raiders keep it tight. I'm going to go 17-14 in a nail-biting, low-scoring game. I don't think there's going to be much going on. I think we'll grind this one out. All right, I'm going to have a look and see whether there's any questions in here. In fact, people in the live chat, and get your questions in, and we're going to take it off the audio pod and just have some time with you guys while I sign off on the audio show. So our next episode is going to be Monday night. Ash, I think you're going to be on the call for half the
first
game,
half.
Maybe?
Yeah, the first half, yeah.
So come and watch with me and Ash. We'll be doing the alternative broadcast. Sync us up with the ESPN coverage. You won't be disappointed. Our review show will then be on Tuesday, and then we're into the bye week. So there'll be a half-season reflection show at some point coming up. Don't miss the College Football Podcast. There's some really interesting results happening right now on College Saturday. So check that out. Otherwise, don't forget to follow us on our socials on Rural Alliance UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, as I'm being reminded to say by Ash. The group for Wildby fans on Facebook is Detroit Lions Fans UK, one private wide, and the website rotluk.com. Don't forget to rate and review and subscribe and all that good stuff. Hammer, where can we find you as well?
On YouTube, Raider Nation News Today, on Twitter, Hammers _ House, and Instagram. Wait, did I just say Twitter? I meant X. Whatever they call it these days. Instagram, hammers.house.
There it is. Do go and support Hammer, doing absolutely great work over there. Thank you as well for coming on and lending us your time. It's been absolutely fantastic. Stay there, chat, because we're coming back just now. But for your audio guys, thank you for listening. Good luck this weekend, this Monday, in fact, and let's go Lions One Pride.
One Pride, FDP.